Do you want to dive into the bizarre world of the paranormal? Do ghosts, UFOs, or the supernatural amaze you to the point of wanting to learn more? Well then, you need BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. With more than 1,200 hours of on-demand talk radio, syndicated from more than 35 shows, the Black Vault Radio Network is your one-stop shop for the world of the unexplained. Check us out and tune in 24 hours a day at www.blackvaultradio.com. Again, that's www.blackvaultradio.com.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Princess Diana, The Evidence, is the book that the British government tried to ban. British investigative journalists John King and John Beveridge have maintained from the outset that they were informed of a plot to assassinate Princess Diana 1 week before her death. 3 years ago, Royal Butler Paul Bernal's revelations confirmed their claim. In an astonishing letter written 10 months before her death, Princess Diana confirmed that a plot to assassinate her in a road traffic accident was indeed planned and carried out by order of the British royal establishment. Now, if that don't make your skin crawl, I don't know what does. We'd like to welcome John King to the show. John, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, good to be here.
And it's like the Skype night here. We got everybody on Skype tonight. Robbie's going to be on Skype later tonight too. But this is actually, I'm digging this. I'm really pushing more of our guests to, if they have Skype accounts, to do this, because as you
it's
can tell,
very clear.
The quality is just bar none.
And his voice is phenomenal.
The website's consciousape.com. Now, that's your company, correct, John?
That's the new website. Yeah, it's been up for about 2 or 3 months now, so it's quite young yet, but we're having fun with that.
What's Conscious Ape all about, if I may ask?
Well, it's basically an alternative news and media website covering lots of topics, really. Basically, the whole gamut of alternative topics, conspiracies, UFOs, ghosts, unexplained phenomena, new world politics, secret history, prophecy, lots of different categories, really. Just anything with an alternative take, even just an alternative view on the mainstream news, really. So lots of different topics and news articles to come along and check out, and then jump on the forums and add your opinion. It's really about your the public, the members' viewpoints, really, as well. So we're just building that up at the moment.
Well, the website, again, is consciousape.com, consciousape.com. Definitely check that out. Now, let me just start off by saying this. I remember when I was a child, when I was very young, and the day the day that Princess Diana was wed, the big wedding, right?
I think half the world watched it.
I remember this vividly, because this wedding went on for like 3 days. It was insane. It was the longest wedding I ever heard of. But I remember coming home from school for like 3 days straight, and the TV was set to the wedding. Princess Diana, her wedding. And it's all we could. My mother would not let me or my father change the TV station for anything. She would take our hands straight off. And I remember watching that. There was not anything. No cost was spared. It was the most amazing thing I had ever seen as far as a wedding was concerned. And I know just that was when I saw this topic and I talked to you, John, that was the first thing that popped in my head was, like, this was a huge deal.
Wedding.
And obviously it was even more of a crazy thing when she passed away or killed. I don't know if we know for sure. Hopefully, maybe by the end of this conversation we will. But I got to ask you, what inspired you to investigate, her death in the first place, John?
Well, it kind of came about quite by chance, however you want to look at it. But I was actually at the time I was the editor over here of quite a successful X-Files magazine. It's called UFO Reality back in the 90s. And when the whole X-Files thing and there's a big UFO kind of awareness going on, really. My associate editor with me, John Beveridge, who was the co-author on the book, we received some information, as we say. It's all in detail in the book, so I won't go into too much detail now. We don't have too much time, but we received some information that led us to believe that Diana had been assassinated. So we just found ourselves being drawn further and further into it. Within, I don't know, very shortly after her death, within weeks anyway, we found ourselves already finding lots of questions, that were no answers to, and lots of anomalies that just didn't seem right. Lots of people were saying they felt that at the very least that they felt that she died in suspicious circumstances. So we just followed our noses, and before we knew it, Scott, we were kind of right in there, and in a way it became a little bit all-consuming. It took over our lives quite, took for the first 2 or 3 years after her death anyway.
Yeah.
And so we kind of just fell into it in that way, really. We're both journalists, so we followed our noses and kind of fell into it in that way.
Well, and this is how a lot of these things seem to get uncovered. That's one of the good things journalism can do. We hear about one story. I just finished a book by a gentleman named Douglas Preston called The Monster of Florence. I don't know if you've ever heard of that or not before, John.
I haven't, no.
Monster of Florence, really, I don't want to take us off topic, but
that's
Monster of Florence, was a serial killer that was committed these killings between, 1975 and, I'm sorry, 74 and 85 in Florence, Italy. A lot of what the movie Hannibal was based on.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Preston, he's a fiction writer, and he come in contact with a man named Mario Spezzi, who was an investigative journalist there in Florence, Italy. And this man was doing the same thing that you guys were doing. He kind of fell into this thing, and it turned into his life's work, right? So, you know, that's just another example of how investigative journalists like yourself kind of fall into these things, and it ends up becoming, well, look at this thing. There's all these dead ends, well, maybe not dead ends, but there's all these strange things we're running into.
And now I want to
buy that's
book.
Right.
My book?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well. but that's just I'm sorry to take us off that, but it's just a good example.
That's okay, yeah. That's absolutely right. That's just how it happened with us as well.
Yeah, you just kind of fall into this thing, and then, like you said, it becomes all-consuming,
mm-hmm.
and... You know, there you go. You're talking about this thing, and you're out there trying to get some information on this. New evidence, as far as this, I know, we don't want to go too much into this, but you know, what new evidence? Maybe a couple things, maybe that you've uncovered that are in the book here.
It's good. The thing is, how this thing's unfolded. I mean, the hardback of this book came out in 2001,
uh-huh.
and the paperback was due out around about 2004.
Uh-huh.
But it's taken this, it's only just come out in the last couple of weeks, literally. So it's taken this amount of time just because of the way that the whole, it's become a saga, really, you know, there was an investigation launched after the French investigation closed, and in Britain, the royal coroner ordered another investigation, which finished around about 2005 or 6 or something. Then we had the royal inquest. It's only just all come to some kind of closure over here. So
uh-huh.
That's why it's taken so long to get it out. But yes, so there are a fair few things that have come to light, Scott. It's particularly, I suppose, one of the most intriguing points was that. When Lord Stevens, who headed up the investigation in Britain,
uh-huh.
investigated the Mercedes that Diana was killed in,
mm-hmm.
They found that Diana's seatbelt was jammed in the retracted position. So a lot of fuss was made immediately after Diana's death. Particularly by her close friends and family, about why she wasn't wearing a seatbelt, because she'd become so fearful for her own life. It's difficult now to think back over these 12 or so, 13 years since it happened, but you know, towards through the 90s and leading up to her accident, Diana was becoming more and more paranoid about dying in an accident. She was, you know, she said certain things about, she thought she was going to die in an accident. She wrote this note that said that she felt that there was a plot to assassinate her, and that it would happen by a road traffic accident.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of this kind of this fear in her, her family and friends were saying it had become with almost like a religious observance that she would always wear a seatbelt wherever she went. And they questioned why she wasn't wearing a seatbelt on this night. Well, now we know why, because as the official British investigation discovered, Diana's seatbelt was the only seatbelt that wasn't working on the night. Another anomaly that we have to look at, you know, amongst all the other anomalies, and say, well, that's a little bit suspicious.
In a little.
Well, you know, and I have to say this. You said it was in the retracted position. I don't know the ins of inner workings exactly of what a seat. You know, I plug it in there and it keeps me in the car and I'm good to go. And you know, I try my best to stay out of car accidents. Not that you ever use them, but you said it was in the retracted position. Basically, I'm just wondering.
Basically, you know, if you brake in a car, if you're driving, you shouldn't be driving along without your seatbelt, of course.
Yeah,
but if you brake, you try and put your seatbelt on, it locks. You can't get it on. Yeah, well, it was locked at that position. She couldn't pull it over herself and put it on.
Okay,
so
I see. All right.
Yeah.
So I understand what you're saying now. Okay, I'm just thinking, you know, I was wondering maybe as a result of the accident. I mean, we all heard about the accident when it happened, obviously. It was all over the news.
Sure.
And unfortunately, I think there was a couple of rough photos that were put out there. And let's be frank, it was a grotesque accident. It was a bad accident. The car was mangled. It was destroyed.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, and again, I'm a layman here. We're discussing this. But maybe this, well, you know, it's a dumb question, I think. You know, to think, well, maybe the seatbelt maybe just got messed up as a result of the accident. I don't know. I mean, it's just something I might ask that. I'm sure you've asked the same question too, right, John?
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible, isn't it? It's possible. But it's just one of a long list of anomalies that we've looked at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible. But another piece of evidence that's come to the fore is that the brakes failed. Now, as one of the anomalies that has always been there is that when investigators went to the crash scene and we and John and I interviewed, the world's foremost crash expert. His name is Professor Murray Mackay. He has his office over here at Birmingham University over here. And we interviewed him. He went to, he was employed by the British government to go out and examine the crash scene on the day after the accident, the so-called accident.
Uh-huh.
He used computer simulated reconstructions of the crash to work out exactly what had happened and one of the anomalies he found, and he actually said to us that he found that there were some anomalies there that he couldn't explain. Now you're talking to the world's leading expert here.
Mm-hmm.
He said to us that there were no skid marks. Now we know that there were at least three vehicles involved in the crash. There was Diana's Mercedes.
Uh-huh.
There was a white Fiat Uno that's never been found,
mm-hmm.
and there was another dark. Car described by several eyewitnesses as probably a Renault Clio. It all involved in the crash. Now, we're talking about a Mercedes that crashed into the concrete pillar at 63 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So it entered the tunnel faster than that, but it had slowed down. Henri Paul, the chauffeur, the driver for that night, was forced. It was an automatic car,
mm-hmm.
but he was forced to slam the automatic lever into neutral to try and slow the car down because his brakes failed as he went into the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, and there were no tire marks. So you imagine this this white Fiat Uno that is known to have been involved. That's official. That's you know. Paint from the Uno was found on the Mercedes, and plastics from the smashed tail light of the Fiat Uno was found at the scene. So a white Fiat Uno was definitely involved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a Mercedes came along, this 4 tons of speeding metal came along and clouted, hit the back of the Fiat Uno.
Mm-hmm.
2 seconds later, the Mercedes had smashed into a concrete pillar along the central reservation of the tunnel. In front of the Uno. The Uno driver had the presence of mind not to brake. He didn't brake or skid. He must have just slowed down and carefully drove past the Mercedes. The Mercedes didn't brake either.
Mm-hmm.
So the words that Professor Murray Mackay used to us when we interviewed him, he said there was some abnormal driving that happened that night. We tried to question him and push him further on what he meant by that,
mm-hmm.
but he refused to speculate, as he
Uh-oh.
Said, because, you know, well, his reputation... probably prevented him from doing that. And I understand that. But
yeah, he's got a career. You don't want to...
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I can understand that. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine, yeah, no, exactly. But nonetheless, he was brave enough, and he's been on television in Britain as well and said as much pretty well that he's not satisfied with the official explanation.
Yeah. Well, there's other things outside of this, too. One thing, Henry Paul. Carbon monoxide found in his blood, from what I understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was this ever resolved, more or less? I mean, I never really heard much. You know, I heard of this before, but was this ever resolved? Did you guys ever find anything out about that?
Well, yeah, we found out a lot about that, but no, it was never resolved. No, 20 0.7%. I don't know, you know, bore you with figures, but around about 20-21% carbon monoxide poison found in Omnipol's blood. Well, 21% carbon monoxide poison is enough generally to incapacitate a mountain gorilla, never mind a normal kind of human being like you and me. Anyone else with that amount of carbon monoxide in their blood. And don't forget as well, the official verdict is that Omnipol had drunk the equivalent of about 1.5 bottles of wine. He was full of a cocktail of prescription drugs as well. Mm-hmm. And he had 21% carbon monoxide poisoning. Now, we haven't spoken to all of them, but six of the world's most eminent forensic scientists, headed up by Professor Venises at Glasgow University in Scotland, checked this out, and they wrote a report for the Royal Inquest saying that they, in their considered opinion, the blood that was tested, upon which the whole verdict rests, could not have belonged to Omnipol. It is simply not possible, because nobody with that amount of carbon monoxide in their blood could have walked in a straight line. It probably would have been unconscious, if not possibly even dead.
Wow.
But apparently, and there's security footage of Omnipol minutes before he left the Ritz Hotel that night to drive Diana and Dodie to the accident. Mm-hmm. Minutes before he left, he's walking around talking to guests. He's quite sober, congenial, friendly. He's not holding his head as though he has a headache, which he would have done if he had that amount of carbon monoxide. Professor Venises, sorry, Scott, just to
no,
finish
go ahead,
that,
no, go right ahead. Sorry.
Professor Venises concluded was that the blood that was tested, and there's a whole saga around that as well, the incompetence of the pathologists that autopsied Henri Paul is a whole other saga. But the only way that amount of carbon monoxide would be found probably in the body of someone who has committed suicide by inhaling, exhaust fumes or something of that nature. So his conclusion, and this is the conclusion of six of the world's most eminent forensic pathologists, their conclusion was that that blood must have been mistakenly taken from the wrong body. Or stored in a file. See, another thing, the blood that was tested was stored in a bottle labeled, literally, quote, unknown male. It wasn't Henri Paul, or it was labeled unknown male. So it's pretty evident to everybody except the establishment over here that blood did not belong to Henri Paul. So claims that he was drunk and that it was a drink-drive accident, simply have not been substantiated.
Why is it, it seems like the medical establishments in situations like this always seem to drop the ball? I mean, if this is what they do for such a high-profile person like Princess Diana, right?
Yeah.
Another thing that comes to mind when I think about this is, I've done a lot of reading and watching stuff on the Kennedy assassination. It's another good example, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to take a soft subject, though, but, I mean, it ties in because I've read pages after pages of, well, they didn't do this, and they didn't do this, and for some reason the body came in this container here, didn't come in this container, and there's a million things that, according to the people that work in the business, they say, no, anybody, any professional would never allow this to happen in their office, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of organs, a lot of Kennedy's organs, for example, they just got missing for some reason. They're just gone. Yeah. Oh, sorry, misplaced them. We're talking about the President of the United States here. We're not talking about Joe Blow like me.
Exactly.
If I was assassinated, there wouldn't be too much of a fuss put up, let's be frank, okay? And if they lost my stuff, okay, stuff happens. I guess it wouldn't be a big deal. But we're talking about President Kennedy here, for example, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds like the same type of stuff is going on here in this situation. Oops, sorry, forgot to do that. Oops, didn't label that thing correctly. Unknown male. Well, we just took it from this guy. We have his birth name right here. Why wouldn't we put his name on there?
Exactly.
None of this stuff.
All sorts of things went on in the lab that night. You know, Dodie Fayed's body and Henri Paul's body were confused. The labels were mixed up. So Henri Paul was labeled as Dodie Fayed and vice versa. So, and talking about the importance of the whole situation, because it was Princess Diana, I mean, we can think about, for example, the emergency operation. First of all, a fatal accident. What turned out, well, it was a fatal accident because Henri, Paul and Dodi Fayed died at the scene.
Yeah.
A fatal accident happened in the centre of Paris involving at least, we know of, three other vehicles, plus a motorbike, four other vehicles, actually.
Mm-hmm.
None of those vehicles have ever been traced. No one else who was involved in the accident has ever been traced. The emergency operation is questionable, to say the least.
Yeah.
It took you know, virtually 2 hours to get Diana to a hospital that was 3.25 miles away from the crash scene.
Yeah.
So you'd think, like, as you just said, Scott, this is not just a crash in the middle of Paris. This is a crash that involved the death of a British royal. Now, I don't want to blow that out of proportion, but that is massive. You know, this is Princess Diana. She was the most famous person in the world at that time.
Absolutely, yeah. Huh? I mean, come on, John. In our country here, for example, if I was at a red light and Bonnie was to rear-end me with her car, right, we wouldn't even move our cars. Well, we might pull them off the road.
Sure.
But we would pull over on the side of the road and go, okay, are you all right? You okay? I'm calling the ambulance anyways to make sure. I mean, it could have just been a little fender bender. They happen all the time, right?
Right.
But
yeah,
in this country, you still call an ambulance to make sure you're okay. You might even have to go to the hospital just in case. You have to call the police out there to make sure that you're, you know, to report the incident, to record the incident for your insurance companies. And then on top of that, you have to report it to your insurance company on your own. And that's for a couple of people that go to work every day where it's regular Joe Blow average citizens. And again, that just rams the point. I mean, now this is, we're talking about France here. Okay, we're talking about Paris. I mean, see, they don't do that there. I mean,
it's very strange, isn't it? Very strange.
Kind of like none and of then, the cameras working that night.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
Sorry, say that again, but I missed that. Sorry.
I said it's kind of like none of their cameras working that night.
Well, that's another, there you go. Yeah, every junction you reach, there's a whole new anomaly that you know, one of these anomalies alone would be enough in most situations to launch a murder inquiry. You know, there's motive there, but there's a whole list of these anomalies, not just one, like the cameras. Okay, there's a lot of numbers been bandied around, but even the Royal Inquest in Britain had to admit that there were at least 10 CCTV cameras en route from the Ritz Hotel to the crash tunnel, and there was another camera on the bridge over the tunnel looking back down the highway that they the camera would have filmed them coming into the tunnel, if you see what I'm saying.
John, hang on for one. Can you hang?
Sure.
I want to get into that after the break if we can, all right? We got to point that out, but I want to start fresh because I'm frying here. Bonnie's frying. We've been going pretty hard here since we started, I think.
Cool.
So cool with you? Can we take a quick break?
Absolutely.
Is that all right? Let's do that. Absolutely. I mean, I don't like cutting people up like that. I apologize, but we got to take this break because we do have our paranormal news coming up with Bonnie Bent. Got to take care of that. When we come back, we're going to talk about these cameras. This is something, Bonnie, I'm glad you pointed that out. We're going to get into that here in a few minutes. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Bonnie.
And Doug's, he's cruising around there somewhere. We'll get him in a few minutes.
Ghostly Talk!
Listen to Darker Side of the Moon Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Visit our website at darkersideradio.com.
From horror movies to the paranormal, we cover it all.
It's a spooky, weird, and zany kind of show.
With your hosts,
Laura Moon
and Becky Ray.
Don't miss it.
Wondering where you can get the latest news and reviews from the world of paranormal entertainment? Frank and Laura take a look at the latest happenings and break down what's new on TV and at the movies each week on Spooktacular, your paranormal entertainment roundup. Check them out by searching for Spooktacular in iTunes or head on over to Spooktacular.com. Oh yeah, be sure to bring along a friend because no one should listen alone.
Welcome to Paranormal Headline News, produced by Genesis Creations Entertainment. I'm your host, Bonnie Vent. This is Bonnie Vent. Do you need a celebrity to promote your product or service? Planning a big event and want that little extra star power? Want to have lunch or dinner with the cast of Leave It to Beaver? Or dinner and a concert with Peter Noon from Herman's Hermits? then go to Genesis Creations Entertainment at www.genesiscreations.biz and book a celebrity today. Now you can create your own crop circle without either stealth or extraterrestrial assistance. All you need are skills approximately equivalent to tending to a chia pet. Writer Lou Harry and his collaborator Bob Stake have created the My Crop Circle Kit, a desktop version of what some people consider a paranormal phenomenon and others laugh off as an elaborate hoax. It's a kit that contains a growing medium, a tray, grass seeds, 5 crop circle templates, and a 48-page, not-so-entirely-serious set of instructions. If you want to convince your friends that aliens landed on your desk, here's your chance. This kit is available on eBay and SimonandSchuster.com. I bet you're wishing you thought of this. I know I am. Ghost Hunting Cops haunt historic Bridgeport theaters. The newly formed ECPP might have a shot at fame. Last Monday, a TV producer was in town to shoot footage of the Ghost Hunting Cops in action inside the Poli Palace and Majestic Theaters, two long-abandoned historic showplaces that score high on the creepiness scale. Jim Myers, a 12-year veteran with the Bridgeport Police Department, is the man behind ECPP. Producers like the fact that Myers uses police training to investigate strange occurrences. If a network picks up the idea, the ECPP would be central to the show, which would follow the team as it checks out various reports of paranormal activity up and down the East Coast. Fox has plenty of paranormal drama on tap for the fall. Now the network has added an order to Warner Brothers TV for reincarnation drama called Past Life alongside its renewal of The Fringe. The plot, they say, is about a team of detectives who use regression therapy and reincarnation to solve crimes. For more information on these stories, please go to www.sdparanormal.com and the Paranormal News feed page. Don't forget, sign up for a free subscription to Paranormal News. Thanks for joining us today on Paranormal News. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on Paranormal News, please send us an email at parax.news@aol.com. Or join us at paranormalnews.mypodcast.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Bonnie Vent.
Paranormal investigation groups all over the world are looking for answers. We often have had the chance to get even the tiniest peek at who or what is on the other side. CPR, or Cooperative for Paranormal Research, is one of these groups. We are dedicated to finding the answers. Dedicated to finding evidence of the paranormal, and dedicated to proving that some places are truly haunted.
The television screen is the retina of the mind's eye. Therefore, television is reality, and reality is less than television.
Princess Diana, the evidence. We've been talking to John King about this. Heck of a conversation we've had so far, I knew we were going to. Some very interesting and disturbing facts we're hearing here tonight about this thing. And before we went to break, Bonnie, you pointed out something really cool, and you beat me to the punch on that one. We were talking about, we started talking about the cameras, the CCT cameras there. Now, how many were there? Give me the numbers here if you can, John. How many were they were there in the area at the time, I guess?
Yeah, well, I was just saying that there have been a few numbers bandied around, but we know that there were at least, because this is the official number calculated by the Royal Inquest, there are 10 cameras en route from the Ritz to the crash tunnel, plus another one at least on the bridge over the tunnel looking back down the highway, so it could have filmed the cars coming into the tunnel.
Yeah.
So that's 11 cameras we know for absolutely sure were definitely along the route.
Mm.
But, you know, the official verdict or the official word on this explanation is that all 10 cameras en route were turned inwards, filming the bricks, the wall on which they were mounted. And the 11th camera was over the bridge over the tunnel just wasn't working. Now, if you want to believe that, Scott,
Why did they turn them around? Why were they turned around? I mean, they spent a healthy sum of money to install these cameras, and they turn them around to face the bricks that they're mounted on?
That's the official word. That is the official explanation. They couldn't think of anything else, so
that is the dumbest official explanation ever.
And I mentioned earlier there were a couple. Back then we saw a couple of photos. I mean, I know people. There were things. Well, oh, it's a hoax. It's whatever. But we did. There were a few photos that flew around of the crash scene itself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know where those come from, but apparently the actual official cameras that were out there, like we're talking about, CCTV cameras, they were done. They weren't even being used. They were turned against the wall, or they were turned around, or they were filming somebody.
That's the official word, yeah.
Well, you know what? There's always these videos floating around, especially nowadays with YouTube and all that stuff out there.
Yeah.
Now, you see these videos all the time out there of tunnels. You know, tunnels are a good example. I've seen a bunch of them where there are these CCTV cameras that are in these tunnels, and they will show these horrific crashes that happen in these tunnels. You see them all the time nowadays. I'm sure people got a hold of them somehow that maybe worked. I don't know how they got leaked, but you see them. They're out there all the time now. You know, this was a while back, but still, to believe that almost a dozen cameras were not operational during this event. The probability of it's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
I mean, we know that as well. We discovered that at least there was one woman driving through the tunnel 15 minutes prior to the crash. She was caught speeding on camera. So how do you explain that one? You know, these are just questions. The thing is, these are. We can sort of talk about it in a lighthearted manner as well, because it's so unbelievable, you know, it's so incredible. But it's just outrageous that they can get away with these kind of explanations. John and I make no bones about the fact that we believe, not just because we received information prior to the event, but also on the weight of evidence, we believe Diana was murdered, and we present evidence to that effect in our book. Mm-hmm. But you know, regardless of that, it's just the fact that they can get away with these ridiculous explanations. Mm-hmm. 10 cameras all pointing towards the wall, they said. And therefore, there is no footage of the journey or the crash. It's just outrageous.
It just seems that is a gross negligence on whoever's job it was to make sure those cameras were functional and working to record events out there. That's what they're put there for. You know, we always hear about Big Brother watching over us. Well, maybe we don't have that much to worry about, apparently. Because especially, I guess, in Paris, it ain't a big deal. Like, if the cameras don't work there, so you can do whatever the hell you want on the streets, apparently.
There you go.
I don't understand that. Okay. Let's talk about something else. There's so much here to talk about. I mean, I know we're not going to be able to cover it all, but you mention earlier that you know it took 2 to 3 hours to get Diana to a hospital that was 3 miles away from there. You said,
absolutely, first of all, there's a lot being said about this particular point, and it has been built up perhaps a little bit too much, because I do just want to say that you know, when this first happened, there was a lot of speculation about who these paramedics might actually have been. You know, were they really paramedics? Were they intelligence operatives? We make a point of saying this in the book as well, that, you know, I have a friend over here who is a paramedic in Britain, I mean, but I have the utmost respect for paramedics. They do an incredible job.
They are a very tough job, I agree.
Absolutely. And in France, they do have a slightly different system where, you know, the golden rule, certainly in Britain, I think in America, is to get the patient to hospital within an hour. In France, it's not quite like that. They do spend more time treating and stabilizing patients, victims of crashes at the scene. But nonetheless, you know, there are still so many you know, just huge questions around this incident. It did take nearly 2 hours to get Diana to a hospital. They drove past another hospital en route. Once the ambulance actually left the crash scene to go to the hospital, it drove at approximately 8 miles an hour. Now, the explanation on that one is they didn't want to shake Diana around. She was not in a very good way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for God's sake, 8 miles an hour. You know, if she's in a bad way, then 3 miles at 40 or 50 miles an hour is going to take you a couple of minutes, and she'll be in theatre and she'll be operated on. And
mm-hmm.
But this journey took the best part of half an hour to go 3.25 miles. So, and we know that the driver was instructed by the doctor in the ambulance to drive slowly. Because the doctor felt that Diana was in a poorly way. Well, okay, but 3.25 miles takes half an hour. That is not acceptable. Well,
yeah, where's the urgency in this thing? I mean,
yeah.
I would like to think then, that anybody...
And then, and then when it got to the hospital, it stopped just across the street because the doctor felt that Diana may have been cardiac arresting again. She did cardiac arrest, apparently, at the scene, and they had to revive her. But she was her blood pressure was very low by the time they got to within about 400 yards of the hospital entrance.
Oh.
So they stopped the ambulance for 10 minutes while the doctor he felt he might have to perform some kind of resuscitation, but he didn't have to in the end. But another 10 minutes there that just wasted. You know, they're 400 meters from the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
If she was bleeding into that, that's the point, really. We interviewed a paramedic over here, and regardless of where you are, whatever your rules and regulations or protocols are, the point is if someone has been in such a high impact accident as that, you have to at least assume that they may be bleeding internally.
Oh, yeah.
And if that is the case, you have to get them to theatre because there's nothing else that's going to save them. You know, you're not going to save them at the side of the road, no matter what you've got there.
Yeah.
So 2 hours is unacceptable in my book to get someone from a crash scene to.
Well, anybody, I think it's unacceptable, and I hate, you know, forgive me for saying this, but you'd think it's Princess Diana,
mm-hmm.
they would be all over this thing to get her there as quick as they can. I mean, I think just politically speaking. If this hospital, these paramedics, if they were all doing their job, they go, look, you know, we're going to do our job. We're going to do the best we can. And if the, you know, again, politics come into play, we're going to save this woman's life. You know,
right.
Sure.
I mean, I think taking the Hippocratic Oath, I mean, that's your job to save anybody's life. But you think in the back of their mind, they might say, I'm going to get the job done here, and we're going to save this woman's life, because if we do, we are going to look great.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're going to look great. I mean,
human reaction, isn't it? Yeah.
Why do lawyers take on these high profile cases? I mean, especially here in the United States, John, we got lawyers taking on high profile cases all the time, and a lot of times they take these cases on for free. And it's not because they have a good heart. It's because they know it's going to bring them a lot of publicity, therefore a lot of work down the road. And not just politics, man, it's just the way it works. So you'd think just putting that little thing, that idea in the motion, that they would have done the best job they could to save her life, but apparently they didn't. They took 2.5 hours to get her to the hospital. It's insane.
Yeah, it is insane. Yeah, it's unacceptable, really. Yeah.
It totally unacceptable.
But the accident happened around about just before 12:30 at night. By the rush hour in the morning, by 6:30 in the morning, that tunnel had been swept clean and disinfected. And open again to traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, there's crucial forensic evidence that's just wiped away and destroyed there in that moment there.
Mm-hmm.
Within 6 hours, that tunnel had been swept clean, all the debris taken out, and it had actually been disinfected. Now, again, that would never have happened in a normal kind of suspicious circuit, what could be a murder scene.
Yeah.
It just would not happen.
No, you'd have people in that tunnel for days combing that thing over.
Of course.
In regards to a murder site, I mean, at least here in the United States, you know, I've seen plenty of accidents that have happened on the road where we do have people here to clean stuff up like that. There's the sweetest, you know, whatever parts fell off the car, plastics, whatever it may be. A lot of times they don't do a very good job. And a lot of times you find yourself dodging, you know, sharp pieces of glass on the road, sharp pieces of plastic.
I had to do it on the way here.
Yeah, there you go. They don't usually do that bang up of a job. Now, in this case, though, we're talking about these guys doing a clean and sweep of the area. They might as well have napalmed it, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly.
Any kind of of evidence there was out there.
Yeah.
Again, very suspicious, John.
Yeah, very.
God, this is frustrating. it is really, it's ridiculous. I mean,
yeah.
All right, and another thing too. I mean, let's just keep hammering. There's so much here. Again, this is even more ridiculous. There were suggestions that Diana was illegally embalmed to cover up her pregnancy. What can you tell us about this now, John? I'm dying to hear this.
Well, she was certainly illegally embalmed. There's no question about it. The thing about embalming is that the formaldehyde solution that they use to embalm a corpse, it destroys all the toxicological tests.
Yeah.
So that, for example, if you wanted to test for pregnancy, you wouldn't be able to once someone's been embalmed. It just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't know. But that's just the theory behind that. But certainly Diana was illegally embalmed. There's a whole story there, Scott. You know, it really is. For example, you're not allowed to embalm someone in France without the permission of the mayor of the city or the chief of police, or if the chief of police isn't around, one of his or her subordinates. Well, and that has to be accompanied by the permission of a close family member or someone who is authorized in funerary rites.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no one in France gave permission. No French official gave permission for Diana to be to be embalmed.
Yeah.
And nobody from Diana's close family nor friends. The phone calls were buzzing backwards and forwards all night. Someone wanted Diana embalmed, and in the end, the person who gave permission for Diana to be embalmed was a man called Keith Moss. And Keith Moss was the consul general, the second highest diplomat at the British embassy in Paris that night. Now, that is just outrageous that, another word for British diplomat, by the way, is MI6 officer.
Mm.
Now, this person gave the order for Diana to be embalmed. It's just outrageous. So, yes, she was illegally embalmed.
Where is her family in this? I mean, I have family. You have family, John. Bonnie has family. I have been through deaths in my family, and there isn't one thing that has been done. For example, when my grandfather passed away, there wasn't anything done until it went through us, and we gave them the green light. And we are just, again, we're just regular working folk here. You know, we don't really, we're not that special at all, but there wasn't anything that was put through that, you know, that we had to give the green light on any type of, you know, embalming. If there was going to be any type of autopsy done, it was pretty open and shut in that case, so that's not quite as, you know, dramatic as this. But the point is that everything had to go through us as the family. Where the hell were they at in this situation?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the word special is a pretty good one, really, Scott, that you used it. I mean, you know, that family is very different.
Yeah.
It's a very different level of you know, I don't know how they...
You didn't tell me they don't wield any type of influence whatsoever?
You know they do.
Well, yeah, they do. They do, of course, but...
I mean, I'm not jumping on your case. I'm just asking a question.
No, I know, but there's a lot of evidence to suggest that certain members of that family were possibly involved in this plot to assassinate Diana in the first place.
God.
Certainly Prince Charles, who... This is not me saying this. Princess Diana herself, in her note, accused Prince Charles of being behind the plot to assassinate her before her death.
Okay.
Now, Prince Charles was coming across the Channel with the royal embalmers. So if the French embalmers hadn't embalmed Diana, Prince Charles was coming across the Channel to France with the royal embalmers with him. So someone wanted Diana embalmed. There's no question about that. Diana was, you know, she was embalmed, and she was embalmed illegally. There's no question about that. There's even evidence. It was all in the British press over here that Sir Michael Jay, who was the British ambassador, actually gave the order, and Sir Robert Fellows, now Lord Fellows, who was the Queen's private secretary, was in the British embassy that night, and we have the testimony of a senior wireless operator in the British embassy that night, who was ordered to evacuate the communications room just before midnight by Sir Robert Fellows and another MI6 officer who came into the room and cleared the room, and they took over operations in the communications room. This is from a British embassy that denies any knowledge that Diana was in Paris. The British, and that's official even today. The British embassy said they had no idea that Diana was in Paris. Half the world's paparazzi and their dogs knew that Diana, that they were at the airport to greet her when she landed.
Yeah.
You know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, whenever it was, and yet the British Embassy and MI6—that's like the CIA not knowing where the President of America is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, okay, Princess Diana wasn't officially royal by that time, but she was still the mother of the future king. Mm-hmm. And MI6 are telling us that they had no idea she was in Paris that night. A lot of things went on at the embassy that night that
they had no idea.
There's not a place she went that they didn't know.
Of course,
That's unheard. There's not even a word to describe how ridiculous that is, because, like you just said, everybody knows that.
The reason they give, the justification they give, is that Princess Diana had recently requested that her personal protection be taken away. She didn't want to be followed around by personal protection officers anymore, because she felt they were Charles's brigade, and she didn't want to be spied on by them.
Uh-huh.
But that's just her personal protection. That, you know, you don't request that MI6 doesn't follow you around. It's like, sorry, CIA, we don't want you to follow us anymore.
Yeah, they're going to tell you, no, we're getting paid to do this, and we're going to stay right here because it's our job, and we have to answer. If you were to come into any harm, we would have to answer for that. So, no, we're here to do our job, bottom line.
It's just ridiculous.
We only got a couple minutes here. I think we kind of alluded to a couple of them. I don't know what we can get into, but all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
all this crap, all this going on here, everything we talked about,
yeah.
what the hell, why? Why would this have to, I mean, I don't know if there's a conclusive answer, I don't know, but basically motives, I guess I'm alluding to here.
Plenty of motives, Scott. I mean, as I say, there's only a couple of minutes left, so not really time to go into it all, but certainly Diana had become a major threat to the establishment and the monarchy over here, without question.
Mm-hmm.
She was trying to get Prince William made king before Prince Charles. She set up a pretty effectively a counter-monarchy situation within the royal household. She was a massive threat to the establishment over here. Her landmines campaign, her relationship with Dodi Fayed, her interview on a massive interview she had over here on the BBC, the state television company over here, really criticising the royal family. There's plenty of motive is not an issue, but to me, and what we were told, this came, you know, when we received our information prior to the accident, what we were told, the primary motive there was because she was so popular. Kennedy was kind of excited.
Thank you, John. Okay, sorry, didn't mean to jump on you.
She was so popular, and she was therefore she was able to sway public opinion in her favor,
mm-hmm.
in favor of her causes, and against the status quo. And people like that don't come along very often.
You read my mind. You read my mind, John. As you were saying all this, I'm like, boy, this sounds just like Kennedy to me. This sounds exactly like Kennedy. He was bringing our troops home. He was doing all this work. He was calling everybody out. And then, boom, all of a sudden, he just ends up dying on us all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? And it sounds like Diana was swaying politics in her own. Again, what does it come down to again? Politics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Politics and money.
My head's killing me, John.
yeah.
But, I mean, yeah. Bonnie, help.
I got nothing.
I'm exhausted here. Because, I mean, this really gets your brain going, and we've talked about things like this before on the show, and I know it, just speaking for myself, my God, I get so frustrated hearing about all these things, all these loose ends. And like I said, I know in my job, okay, if I was to leave this many ends unraveled in something, I would have every manager breathing down my neck going, okay, you are supposed to do this part. This is your job. Why wasn't it done? Well, I didn't know that she was in town. I had no idea she was in town.
I think Shelley said it the best. Even Weekly World News knew where she was.
Everybody knew where she was.
Absolutely, Bonnie. Yeah, you got it. That's absolutely that. Yeah, without question.
Hey, you guys, I have a question.
Oh, look who's here.
Oh, my God. Is that Doug?
Yeah, Doug.
The ever elusive Doug.
Yeah, Doug, what's up?
I'm sorry I got pulled away, but I have been listening on the edge of my chair,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things that really puzzled me during the whole thing, and it was sad, and it was like a gut-wrenching time, because I think everybody looked up to Princess Diana, but for some reason, I always had the impression that the French, what are the gendarmes or something, the police in France were just like, you know, that they were just like absolutely phenomenal and very thorough and everything like that. Because, and maybe I had that impression from movies, obviously not the Inspector Clouseau movies, but other movies. or maybe I had that impression from, you know, just, you know, hearsay or something, but I always thought they were like a crack team, and they could figure it all out. But it sounds like there was a lot more going on. Why couldn't even the, I thought, fairly respected French police figure all this stuff out and cut through all the red tape and all the politics?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, no matter how good you are and how efficient you are, you know, in the end, you're following orders, and I think the top end of the chain, our evidence is anyway, without question, MI6 and French intelligence were working together. And if you come down the pyramid, to the guys on the street, you know, the actual gendarmes you're talking about, the guys who may be very good at what they do, but they can only do what they're allowed to do.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably the problem. There's a whole bunch of stuff that it's just not time to go into.
But oh, yeah.
It's a good point, though. It's a good point bring up.
It always comes down to careers for people. I mean,
and tied behind the back.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's be frank. I think even if I was put in a position like this, where it's like, okay, look, you want the truth or you want to eat?
Right. Yeah. You got it.
You got a mortgage and kids to feed. I mean, I can't blame these people if this is what's happened, right? Doing what they're doing. They're only trying to take care of their families and do what they've been trained to do in their trade. And that's the unfortunate thing. That's the problem with all these things, it seems like. Same with the Kennedy assassination, because there's so many, it seems like there's so many parallels with this thing, too. A lot of people were just following orders.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more we can do about that. John, hang on the line. Don't leave us just yet, okay? We do have to go to break here in a second, though.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us. This was an absolute, I don't want to say it was fun, but it's really, it was
educational.
Very, yeah. I'm like,
eye-opening.
Really, very eye-opening.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me on.
Hang on for 1 second, John. Don't leave us just yet.
Sure.
All right, cool. Coming up here, we'll be talking to Robbie Thomas about the Sally House.
Yeah.
Got to watch the movie this weekend. All kinds of fun stuff to talk about with that.
Not fair.
Look, I just got it a couple days ago. It's a long story. Well, you know, you guys are cooking me tonight. All right.
Oh, go to break.
We're
going
to break.
Robbie.
Let's bring Robbie in. We'll be right back after this.